Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, folks. My wonderful audience, if you get a little lilt in my voice, it's a tough time in America today. And I wasn't sure I was going to start with this, but I think all Americans need to acknowledge this. Today, President Trump, who has only a little more than a week in office, is being threatened with impeachment. And he's been removed from media. Our president, our elected president, elected by about half the nation, the voters, is being treated like a bad boy, insulted, slapped around, and removed from his ability to communicate in America today. Now, I know that many of you who listen to my show, and I thank God for this, are of different persuasions politically. But the one thing you must know is that this is a terrible thing that's happening. I've been on this earth a long time. I've followed this kind of thing in every single socialist country, which then deteriorates further and further into pure totalitarianism. Once these not very grown-up kids that are running these tech companies get away with this kind of thing, there's no end to it. In the last couple of days, even the American Civil Liberties Union, which does not like Donald Trump at all, and they kind of remind us that, well, yeah, I could see why the tech companies might want to do this. Can you imagine saying that in the middle of this? But they shouldn't, because it's wrong. They should stop. That's the ACLU. ACLU warning about the consequences of this. And I know I may lose some people. I hope not. Because if I lose you, you may lose the only voice you're going to hear that's going to be telling you the truth about what's going to be happening. Things are going to get worse and worse now. A country in which smart aleck, young tech people who got rich because they were smart, not wise. Maybe they got rich because they were not just smart, but cunning, competitive, who think that they can actually take over the nation's communications and wipe out the president of the United States. We're in desperate trouble. We're a step away from whatever that North Korean kid was when he was a kid and took over, and now he's sort of a pudgy older guy. We're a step away from that. So I want to start with that. I feel like all Americans who understand what's going on about this stuff need to communicate, and not just to each other, but hopefully to people on the other side who have maybe lived as long or studied the evolution of political systems. Ours is devolving now into a Venezuela. We're over the edge now. We're way over the edge where they can do that kind of thing and sway an election, not just by fraud, but sway an election by taking over the media, not reporting the truth about Biden and his China connections, millions of dollars from the Chinese, not reporting anything except things that would hurt the Republican candidate. So I say this with a nervous heart, but I think whether you watch me or not is not nearly as important as what's happening to America today. Nothing is as important. Not even my life is as important as what's happening to America today. So I want to start with that. And by the way, let me tell you who you're looking at, because I have a couple of other things to say. This is Peter Reznik, R-E-Z-N-I-K. He's actually lived in Russia. He has a PhD. Is your PhD in social work? Because you have an LCSW too.
No, I have a PhD in psychology and social, a degree in social work.
Yeah. And many people have the mistaken idea that the top of the intellectual pyramid are the psychiatrists. They're actually the basement, folks. The top of the intellectual pyramid in our field is not people with my training, because I trained myself. I was training myself, some of you know, in college, you know, working in state mental hospitals and reading psychologists and very few psychiatrists. So I think that you genuinely are going to be hearing from a man who has many different perspectives than I do, but who has the wisdom to help people, the understanding, the experience. And we all come from our own different approaches to helping people. If I were working with a patient and Peter was nearby, I would be really happy if, in addition to my psychotherapy, they were going to Peter for the range of other alternative treatments. So, and we'll learn more about him. A really interesting person. You know, this show is such a blessing for me, and finding out I've had old friends who have known me for 30 years, as in his case of reading me, and I'm just getting to know him, and it's wonderful. And Peter has a show now on PRN, on this network, www.prn.fm. What's the name of your show, Peter?
Dr. Peter Resnick's Toolbox.
Toolbox. Yes. I've never talked about toolboxes. See, there's a difference already.
I came up with this title because when people call me, most of the time, they really don't know what I'm doing. They say, some such and such person recommended that I call you, but what actually are you doing? And yeah. I say, oh, I'm just a big, big toolbox, regardless of what you come with, whether you have a brain tumor, anxiety, depression, constipation. I teach specific tools. How to get better. You practice, you get better. You don't practice, you will see. So give it a try. So, but it's all about tools. No theory, no discussion. I really appreciate psychotherapy, heart psychotherapy. I learned a lot. We'll talk about it from you because I consider, even though we never met, as I told you, I've been following you, your work, and reading your books for 30 years. But that's not what I do. I don't do psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. I'm much more a teacher than a therapist. Therapy is a beautiful thing. The Latin word for therapia means nursing, nurturing. And I do believe you are a very nurturing psychotherapist. But I do something very different. But before we go into it, I would like to share with you something. How I got to this progressive radio network. Gary Noll and I know each other for at least 25 years. He invited me many times to his show to interview me about my work. And in the last few years, we haven't been in touch. And then he called me quite recently, and we catch up on our lives. And then he says, Peter, I want you to take an hour. We have an hour available to do your own show. You can talk about anything you want to. And I said, you know, I'm so busy. I don't know. Let me think about it. And I wanted to check out who is on the show. Then I go on the show, and the first person I see, it shows Wednesday, Dr. Peter Bregan. I close the site. Because I know what Gary does, and I know what you do. And it's something which is very difficult to do, particularly these days, and that is to speak the truth. Where I'm coming from the Soviet Union, I came to America 40 years ago at the age of 27, having a lot of difficulties in that country, being homeless for a year and a half. I lived socialism. I lived political correctness where you could not speak up. So what you do is courageous, if not dangerous these days. So when I joined PRN, I felt that I am like a kid who is permitted, who is honored to be with grown, courageous adults. So I'm so, so happy and honored that I am part of this network. I wanted to share with you this.
Yeah, and most of you know Gary Null, who he is, but he actually is the owner of PRN, of this Progressive Radio Network. And progressive to him means something much broader, I think, than the general term. He really means cutting edge and frontier and pioneering. And that's who the folks are on this network in many different political bases or directions. Two other things I want to mention, and then we'll get some more into your thoughts. And I've encouraged Peter to take his time today because we may have much more to talk about than 1 hour. But first, I want to remind folks that there are early effective treatments for COVID-19. And I think I'm just obligated as a physician and a human being to let you know about that. And two very recent shows of mine, on one, Peter A. McCullough, an MD, who is, you may have seen him on television because he testified before Congress recently. McCullough does a full hour recent show. You can easily find him on Dr. Bregan's YouTube channel on the early treatment and also prevention of the COVID-19. And you'll also learn how you can find doctors who, for a $90 consult, will enable you, no matter what state you're in, including New York State, which puts strict use limitations on hydroxychloroquine, how you can get the oldest, best, safest treatment early on for this disorder of COVID-19. And also Elizabeth Lee Vliet, V-L-I-E-T. I know these people well now, and they're wonderful people. And she's an MD, she's Dr. Vliet. And those two shows will give you the best information there is today on what you should do if you or your one of your family members or somebody becomes ill. I had a family member who came down with COVID-19 and started to get very sick. And I referred her to the network that Dr. Vliet and Dr. McCullough, and in particular the medical society that we both belong to, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, to their blue booklet, and my family member started hydroxy, and within one day she and her friend who had gotten it with her were feeling tons better. And I'd heard about this all the time, like sometimes the first dose begins to turn things around. Very, very important. And the other thing is kind of fun. Gary Null and the group that he works with, including Jesse, who is the manager of the station, decided to do what they called a limited number of awards for the first time for people on their PRN. And they gave me the Award of Excellence for Outstanding Programming in Spiritual Health. And I love that. I think they just wanted to acknowledge me. Because, of course, I am very interested in spiritual health, but I've been focused so much on the pandemic lately, as all of you know. And today maybe be a little bit more about spiritual health, too, because I do believe that's in Peter's toolbox. With that, I wanted to tell you that Peter is in New York City. So, believe it or not, in the great New York City, I don't really have anybody I refer to. So here you have a resource in New York City, and he may also know people that he could refer you to.
Now I'm virtual. I'm on Skype and on Zoom.
Now, well, that's true. So, it's all the same. But, you know, there's something nice about being on Zoom with somebody who's in the same city, too. I think it's a fantasy. But, well, and someday, you know, people will be seeing people again. But thank you for reminding me of the world we live in. I want to just kind of leave it open to you now. We can go many different directions, but I want people to learn about you and what you do.
Let me give you first, since we mentioned the toolbox, I want first to introduce your viewers and listeners to what are the tools that I use. none of the tools that I use are property of psychology, psychiatry, because psychology or philosophy for that matter are all but intellectual guesses of why things are the way they are. So if you're a Freudian analyst, you believe that everything is sexual drive and you wanted to have sex with your mother and kill your father. And if you are interested in God, in reality, it's a form of neurosis. You are looking for a lost father figure. And if you are generous, you are a giving person, it's only a reaction formation against anal retention. And if you are a behavioral psychologist, which I studied thoroughly, then you're like Pavlov's dogs, you're conditioned. But it's all theories. Some of them have good tools, not analysis, but some have good cognitive behavioral psychology. But still they're guesses. The only unquestionable reality is the pain of a person itself. And I don't follow any theory except one thing. I utilize the tools which are God-given, with which we come into this world. We have eyes, there's a purpose for them. We have ears, nose, we have heart. Without them, we cannot live. So anything that we came into this world with is essential. So we were born with will. Some people have stronger will, some people have weaker will, but will. So you utilize a tool called will, willpower, building the will, because without the will, no matter what tools I give a person, they may say, yes, I will do it. They come back. Did you do it? Well, I could do better. If you could do better, why did you do better? So,
yes.
Then the reason. That's where cognitive therapy may come in. Some tools are very useful. Then imagination. You know, the father of chemistry, Paracelsus, said, a man has two workshops, one, the body, another, imagination. Why is it so important? I will talk a little bit later. But the next one is night dreams. We are born, nobody, psychology didn't teach us. Yes, Freud brought people's attention in modern times to dreams, but all cultures in the world paid attention to dreams from times immemorial. And Rambam, Moses Maimonides, philosopher and theologian of 12th century. In fact, he was a personal physician of Sultan Saladin, said, tell me what your night dreams are, and I will tell you not only who you are, but who you can become. So night dreams reveal to us what is deep inside. So, and another tool that I use, and I will later tell you how they all interact and how I use them together. But another one is understanding the meaning of the form. That's usually people roll their eyes. What do you mean? Because I don't want to use the term that is very known to people, but really inappropriate. It's called face reading. Now people know, oh, face reading, that's very strange because it's not known to American people very much. But it's taught in French medical schools and nursing schools and in Italian nursing schools and medical schools. It's not just face, it's body type, profile, every feature, everything in our appearance has meaning. Indians have their own system called Vata, Kapha, Pitta in the Ayurvedic system. The Chinese have five element system. And in the West, we developed four types, earth, air, fire, water. And each person, all people on the planet are grouped in these four groups, one of these four groups. Why is it important? Because it's a different language that each group speaks. I'm not talking about just speaking language. I'm talking about how we respond to infection, how we respond to stresses. Our bodies, you know, even if people look at you and me, we have different body types. And if you have, if you think about Donald Trump, this is a different body type. And if you think of this Korean dictator,
him,
totally different body type. So we act in the world very differently, and our organs respond very differently. By looking at a person's appearance, we can know everything about this person. In fact, you know, I've been a therapist for 43 years. In the first 13 years, I did not know what we call in America human morphology. Morpho means form and logos means meaning, the meaning of the form. So I did not know this body of knowledge. And you are a psychiatrist, you do therapy, so you know it takes a while to know, to get to know a person. But it takes me seconds to know what clicks, why a person thinks the way he or she does, what the reasons are for their behavior, what makes them excited and happy, what makes them cringe. All that I can see in a second. It's not, I can brag about this tool because I did not invent it. It's at least 4,000 years old, coming from ancient Egypt. So it's a wonderful, wonderful tool to apply just to get to know a person. There are other reasons, because you also know what diet they need, what's the best diet for this body type, what exercises to give them, mental exercises. Well, again, I will give you a little clinical vignette later so you understand how all these bodies of knowledge that I listed go into my work. But yet another tool that I use is intuition. Some people call it gut feeling. Some people call it, because it comes physically. We know you get intuitive feeling. It's usually you could take a breath, your body responds, and usually it's to your stomach. Some people call it receiving messages from subconscious mind. Some people call it connecting with your higher self. Whatever, it doesn't matter how you call it. But we have intuition and we need to get in touch with it because our intuition never lies if we learn to listen its language. Not third, fourth, fifth voice, but the first voice that always gives us 100% of the time the right information. But you need to know how to listen to it. But these are the tools. Let me tell you how I utilize them. In fact, you know, you, Dr. Bregan, you and I exchanged emails yesterday. So even before I was going to sleep, I was thinking, how can I put all these years, decades of my experience and present it in a short period of time? And I thought, maybe I will give them a couple of clinical vignettes. And then I explained how it worked. Okay?
Sure.
One, working with the body, many, many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, if not more, I was in Jerusalem visiting my close friend, and his wife is a nurse. And her distant relative was brought to the hospital with a bleeding liver. Liver is bleeding, he's dying. You know, Israel is not America, particularly those times, you know, liability. No. She calls me and says, my uncle, I don't remember what relationship was, he's dying. Can you do anything? Because she knew what I'm doing. I say, is that okay for me to come to the hospital? And it was like midnight. And my friend Shimon and I were at home. And she said, yeah, come. So we take a car. And we have a ride 50 minutes from Jerusalem to Hadassah Hospital in Tel Aviv. And I'm thinking, what is liver? Both traditional medicine in the East and Western traditional medicine recognize liver being connected with anger. So I think this is, and my friend is saying, oh, I know this relative of my wife. He's such a beautiful person. He has 11 children, and yet he does not go home after work. He teaches in yeshiva, in a school, Jewish school. After school, he gets the truck from the school. He goes to different restaurants, collects food, and goes to feed poor people, regardless whether they're Arabs or Jews. And I'm thinking, why would the man like this be so angry that his liver is... Remember, I believed, yes, there are physical also reasons that his liver can be not functional. But most of the time, and studies from around the world demonstrate that even though a person may have genetic predispositions to some physical disorders, most of the time, psychological catalyst is present. Because a person can be exposed to asphalt, to carcinogenic substances, and the person next to him is exposed. why is this particular person got broke down, not that person? So it's been my experience, not only belief, that there is always emotional and mental component to anything. So we arrive to Hadassah Hospital. I come in, he is lying like this, and I don't speak Hebrew, he doesn't speak Russian, he doesn't speak English. So we work through interpreter. And I say to him, and I, at that time, I wasn't religious at all. He doesn't even want to talk to me. And I then say, translate to him, why was he angry so much in the last few days? And suddenly he opens his eyes. He said, yes, I was angry. And then he permitted, you know, me to talk. And I say, okay, so we now need to heal your, we'll not talk about anger, but we need to treat your liver. So close your eyes. Remember, this person never done imagery. You know, he's a religious man. I say, close your eyes and go into your liver. Think or imagine going into the liver. Of course, you know, he has to imagine something. So first, there was a literal imagination, meaning he says, I see nothing through the translator. I see just black and blood. That's all I see. I say, keep going. Now I introduce an element that is out of normal. Till now he was in the liver with his imagination, but okay, there are organs. I say, take a flashlight. You don't see well, it's dark, so take a flashlight. So then he says, well, I walk. Yes, it looks like dark. Oh, I am in my yeshiva. He's in school. I say, tell me what you see. He says, I see the door of the principal. I say, tell me, why is it dark? Why? He says, fuse is burned. I say, what happened during the day that you are here? You know, there is a reason. What day is it? He says, this is Thursday. It was like days before. I just walked out of the office. What happened? He refused to give me the truck. I used the truck to help people. And I was very angry with him. And then I said, why is it so dark? He said, fuse is burned. And I know that he has a large family. I say, bring all your family. No. I said to him, change the fuses. And now imagine a person never done imagery. And he says, I cannot change. I don't have strength. And I say, bring all your family and ask your children to change the fuses. And he's lying. You know, he has this bag there and all the wires. And he smiles. And he says, yes, there is light now in yeshiva, in the school. And then I say, come out of the yeshiva, say thank you to your children and open your eyes. Now he looks at me in a different way. It's kind of weird what happened to him. And it's quite real, you know, when you do imagery. And I say to him, and look, I was not religious, and he is a religious man. And I say to him, you tell me what is the first commandment. And I'm very strict, I'm young, and he says, you know, I am your God, you have no God before me. I say, the job is taken, and you usurped the position of God. You were angry because you judged the principal. And he goes, he did not. I say, yes, that is fine. He does not want to do it, and you are doing a good thing. But not every person is like you. He's on a different level. So if he is not kind and not caring about other people, you feel compassion. He's an invalid. His heart is closed. He knows what you were doing. So you need to feel sorry for him. But because you judged him, only God is a judge. What I want you to do now, every hour, you ask God for forgiveness. And every hour for usurping God's place. And every hour you close your eyes and invite your children to go to yeshiva, make sure that it's beautiful. This is it. That's all my session. And it now was maybe 1:30 at night. we drive, my friend and I go home. His wife stays in the hospital. By the time we arrive to Jerusalem, remember, there were no cell phones. She calls and says, bleeding stopped. Now, what is the mechanics? Now I want you to understand. Please interrupt me anytime if something is not clear. Now, how does it, this sounds crazy, it sounds magical, I'm telling stories. No. How does mind and body, how do they connect so well? Why one influenced the other? How thinking can affect the body so much? Imagine for a moment, this is my favorite example, I give it to my students. Imagine you're in New York City and you decide to cross Central Park at midnight. You'd be crazy, but you decided, you know, there is no bus, you're crossing. Suddenly, you hear behind you, you go a little faster. The steps go a little faster. You slow down, they slow down. What happens with your physiology? Pum, 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 right? Cerebral spinal fluid, adrenal flow, blood sugar, all changing. Your body is responding. What does it respond to? Somebody is after me. You have thoughts, but thoughts are what kind of thoughts? They are images of somebody malevolent, yes? Now you turn around, you say, this is a friend you have not seen for a long time. He was trying to surprise you. Your physiology changes. Your blood is flooded with interleukin, which can strengthen your immune system. Your whole physical reaction changed in response to what? Two things. One, an image that changed. And two, your interpretation of the image and cascade of these physiological changes happened. The same thing with catching the bus. You turn around the corner, you need to catch the bus. And you see the last passenger is entering the bus. And you want to be there, you're 10 yards away. Boom, you run, right? You don't say, I want my heart to stimulate my muscles to run, so I would run norepinephrine to be released in the brain. No. All you do, you don't need to know physiology or neurophysiology. You see the distance between you and the bus, and you have the impulse of will. I want to be there. And the rest your body produces within less than a second. So two things, impulse of will and an image. So this is not a story I'm making up. There are studies from so many universities, and you probably know about studies that the surviving spouse has twice as high risk of getting from dying from heart attack than an average person. Why? A person, if we assume that it's a loving couple, and let's say a spouse dies and the other one goes, I wish I would be with him or I wish I would be with her. An image comes, possibly even children coming and being at the funeral. So the image comes, the wish or will comes, and the body says, yes, sir, yes, madam, and begins to work to fulfill the wish. That's why when a person comes to see me with heart problems, I am immediately talking about the love issues, because the heart is not only, as William Harvey discovered, a pump, it's a seat of love, frustration. There are studies, we don't have time, 50 years old from Dr. Jenkins, I don't know if you know the study, that demonstrated that it's not high cholesterol or blood pressure, certain form of diabetes, that the highest risk for having a heart attack, but hating your job. So it's all about liking, disliking, loving, hating. And the body and the link between the mind and body is the image. And the way our body will respond is how we interpret the image, our interpretation. And Kenneth Peart, former chief of biological psychiatry at the National Institute of Health. Yeah, I see you smile. You know her, right?
Yeah, we were friends before she passed.
Right.
Yeah.
She wrote a wonderful book, Molecules of Emotions. And she says, in every cell, interpretations are registered as physical events. So when people come to see me with different problems, I listen to how they operate in their life. First, I see it through their face. I understand who is reactive, who is swallowing and holding on, who is not able to express themselves, who holds on, who holds the grudge. And so then I go that direction by knowing already what's going on inside. And then my job is to teach them the tools to get over it. I love the book that you wrote, your last, I just finished it, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. And you're talking about also anger. This is a very interesting subject. And when I was reading it, I was having a discussion with you. Because for me, anger is not a primary emotion. It's a secondary. Anger is a consequence of judgment. So when I work with people with anger, I teach them how not to judge. If you don't judge, you can kill somebody without judging them. You can kill somebody. Let's say, God forbid, somebody would come now, want to kill me. And, you know, I studied martial arts. And if I could, I would protect myself all the way. But I wouldn't hate them. Let's say this person is not mentally ill, but let's say a terrorist. I don't know why a terrorist would want to kill Peter Resnick. But let's say it's a terrorist. I don't need to hate him. I don't have resentment toward him. If I were him, if I grew up in his environment, if I were brainwashed like him, I would want to do the same thing. So I don't hate him, but I have for sure right to protect myself. So that's why you don't need to judge. People are who they are. People do what they do. We may disagree. We may even put up intellectually a resistance to it, but we don't need to hate. Now America is so divided, and people don't just, I have to tell you, you know, a few people know, I actually lost a friend that I knew for 30 years since I came to America, for 34 years, and I love him, a wonderful person, but very, very liberal, and I'm conservative. And when Donald Trump was running for president, I looked up an interview that he had in 1988 with Oprah Winfrey. And he was talking about how Chinese rob our country, how the jobs going away, he's not crazy. He didn't make it all up. He understood what was going on 30 years before that, or 20 years before. So, and yeah. I expressed my opinion and to my friend, and he said, and remember, Donald Trump still was running. And he said, you would vote for him? And I said, yes. I don't like certain qualities. I don't necessarily like his personality, but I share many ideas. And yes, I would vote. And you know, he said, then yeah. We have nothing to talk about. I lost a friend. And he's a beautiful human being. But that's what... Why? Because then he judged me. I don't judge him for being liberal. That's his ideas. I grew up in a different environment, and I know what liberalism leads to. I lived in the Soviet Union, so I know what it is. So, and I studied what happens with Cuba, with Venezuela, with all countries that become socialist. So, but it's his right to be who he is. I don't need to hate him. So we can live without judgment, and if we live without judgment, we live without anger. Look how I got carried away. So,
well, take a deep breath. I think that there's a lot of mulling and thoughtfulness here. The central theme in what you've been talking about so far, I believe, is forgiveness. It's the theme with the man who was angry at the principal. And then you go on to talk about defending yourself and not judging people, because judgment and anger are so closely related. We're in agreement about all of that. And also, of course, you've read the book, you're aware we're in agreement that anger is a very superficial, shallow emotion. It basically, you're emphasizing that it comes from judgment, and I think that's true. And I would tend also to emphasize that it comes from feeling very deeply wounded and having no tools to deal with it. So you go into rage, and even murderous rage, because you have no way to deal with how much you feel hurt. Even though the hurt might be more about something that happened 20 years ago, or and you don't even know what's going on, but you have all those feelings. So I think that that's really, really important. I was thinking about telling a vignette, but I don't think I will talk about my own work, but I was just thinking about telling a vignette that's very similar to my going into being an intern. I was in the hospital and a woman with cancer and helping her give up the idea that she couldn't eat because the cancer was not blocking her esophagus. And I bring all her family in. She'd rejected them all. And you brought the first story, I guess I will tell it just briefly, but the first story you talked about bringing in the family and the man's imagination and the healing value of the family coming in. And I did it literally. I brought the family in. And I told them that they loved her and that they would like to be with her when she's dying, not run away from her, because she was going to have apparently a limited life. And it worked out beautifully. She had a happy, very, very happy, literally happy number of weeks with them coming every day and being together. So I think there's a common theme there. And one of the interesting things is to us Jews is that I think it's a theme that's more Christian, and maybe you could help me with that. But certainly Christ's message, maybe above all things, is in addition to loving God, is love of God, love one another, but also to be forgiving. And I think that one of the things that and I'm sure it's in Judaism too, it's a sentence, maybe, and you, I hope, know more about that than I do. But a central theme, folks, is forgiveness to life. And it's so corrupting to be angry and hostile. It's destructive. It stops rational thinking. And that brings us back again to America today. And we have a whole group of people who are so angry in the media and other places that they just relished angry people rioting all summer. I mean, they just were so into the anger and expressing the violence. And there's been almost none of that on the right. And in fact, Antifa was involved with what happened at the Capitol building. They were leading that, but there were also genuine conservatives involved as well, like the woman who got shot and killed. It's time not just to let go of the anger, but the judgment, because what people on the left are doing, you need to understand, you're creating the destruction of America. America's built on freedom. America's built on each person being a treasure and being respected. And it's not about some smart aleck kid or his other kids that are working in a group censoring the president or censoring me or censoring you folks. Because it won't end. This never ends with all the progressives being happy and all the conservatives being done in. Because the people who are leading you are not going to want your particular dissent at some point or another. This does not lead to a happy group of either Marxists or progressives. It leads to the taking over of the most vicious, most violent, most hateful group of people at the top, like you and your kindness never imagined. And we really need to get back to letting go of our anger and loving one another and respecting liberty and not judging one another. It's so interesting. I didn't plan on this, but I do think I've just got to be talking more and more about it. But we come together from some, you come from a whole bunch of ways, and I come from a whole bunch of ways. But a lot of what we are helping people do is intuitively very similar. And I think that maybe as therapists, and you are a therapist, that as therapists, we come at things from our strengths. But we may be coming at common things all the time. And I think a lot of the difference between the way we are helping people is a difference in our own personalities and our own sense of what helps us and our own sense of what works. But as you know as well as I, the studies show that being a caring human being is the single most important thing about helping other people. I mean, you would agree, I think, with that, being a caring person, and you so clearly are deeply caring. So I'm not sure where to go further. These are all very deep stuff. I'm going to give it back to Peter Resnick here.
Forgiveness.
Raise your voice.
Yes. I want to talk about forgiveness since you brought up the subject. And it will bring us to another aspect of my work and my life. And that is the spiritual aspect. You know, there is a scene where Jesus is crucified and there is a Roman comes and pokes him with a spear. And
yes.
Just before Jesus says, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit, Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, wait a minute. Are you delusional because you're in this state? Of course they know what they're doing. They're poking you. No. What he says is not this man who is poking me, but his soul. His soul doesn't know. On a spiritual level, this is the Roman who hates me, but this Roman is the physical embodiment of an aspect of his soul, and the soul is crying for what it's doing. So there is a physical body, and what in Judaism we call nefesh, or our intelligence, and then there is neshama, that is our soul. And our life here is a physical expression of that soul's experience in this time around. So, and our job, as my teacher of blessed memory, Colette, said, is to climb the ladder of ourselves, to become the best of ourselves, and to change. And forgiveness plays the central role. Buddha said, remember, being angry at someone is like grabbing a handful of hot coals to throw.
That's good.
First.
Mm-hmm.
Burning. And I was thinking about forgiveness. For many years, my mother went through concentration camp. My father lost his family. I grew up on terrible, terrible stories. And for many years, I wouldn't buy a German car. I had resentment. Mm-hmm. Very recently, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I completely let go of it. I tell you how. You know, every week, We read a portion of the Torah, of the Bible, or what Christians call New Old Testament. And I was reading a passage where the Hebrews now in the promised land, and God says, and you will not hate the Egyptians. Wait a minute, they were just killing you. For generations, they were enslaving you. No, and you will not hate the Egyptians, for you were the strangers in their land, and they gave you a chance. So you don't forget to be grateful. You have to let go of resentment.
Where is that? Where is that in the Bible? In the Hebrew Bible?
It's in Exodus? We will be coming in a few weeks because now we just started Exodus this week. So the magical thing happened that week that I said, I let go. That's right. Germans didn't enslave us for 100 years or 200 years. They crucified us for 22 years, from 33 till 45. But Jews lived very good lives in Germany before that. And they took responsibility after the World War II. And Jews can freely live in Germany now. So the moment, two things, right? And the third thing happened, I happened to watch a movie, The Book Thief. It's a beautiful story of middle class, middle Germany family. And I saw how regular Germans live. And I completely let go of my resentment. But that was my last resentment, I believe, in life. After that, a German guy writes to me. I wrote a book called Face Reading Secrets for Successful Relationships. It's all available on Amazon.com. And he wrote to me, I love your book and I am bilingual. I would like to translate it into German. We became friends. It's now available in German.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Once I found a way to forgive, the world opened for me. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's how it happens. So I don't know if we have a time. I wanted to give another little yet. Do we have?
No. Well, I think about 5 minutes for a vignette would work.
Okay. So
four or five minutes.
Very recently, maybe a year and a half ago, a physician came to see me, said, I don't really feel good. I haven't been happy. I am healthy physically, but I don't want it to go further because I feel depressed. I am married. I have 3 children. Everything is good in my life, but something is missing. I don't know what. And it's a man in his 40s. So I did the simple exercise. People can join us. You know, it will take less than a minute. And I said, close your eyes and think or imagine yourself climbing up a ladder to look over a tall fence and see what you see. And then open your eyes. That's all. You can open your eyes. So different people will see. Those for whom the world is a friendly place will see maybe a pasture. Those for whom it's not friendly, they will see a war. Whatever they see, it's a simple exercise just to introduce imagination. And he said, you know, I saw a beautiful, beautiful place. My children, I didn't know the place, but my children played there. But I noticed a strange thing. When I was climbing, it was hard for me to breathe. I said, do you have breathing problems? He said, no, I'm an athlete. I exercise. I just had a checkup. So where do I go with it? I said, well, what is breath? In Hebrew, breath is ruach. That is the same in Sanskrit, it's prana. In Chinese, it's qi. But what is ruach or qi? It's spirit. So if physically you're okay, so you tell me something about spirit. You have difficulty breathing. Is there something that is missing in your spiritual life? And suddenly, he said, you know, I was a devout, I was an altar boy, so connected with the church. And then I went to medical school. I was too busy. And then I had to pay loans. And then I got married and I had children. I completely got disconnected. I am telling you, a man walked out of my the first session, smiling, happy. He left. We made another appointment. In a couple of days, he canceled the appointment. He said, I'm in the right place. I go back to church. I am happy. I spoke to him since then 3 or 4 times because he was referring clients to me. But he says, no problems. He's not depressed. He definitely didn't need medication. Sometimes it's a shift of consciousness. There was a beautiful Russian writer, Maxim Gorky, and he said, there is a string in everyone. You just need to find it and touch it, and it will start singing. So it's finding what is missing in each person's life. Victor mm-hmm. Frankl wrote, Man's Search for Meaning. Without meaning, without that main thing, a person is dying. So it's finding a way. Less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, we have a few minutes, and I really just deeply believe in that, in the importance of that. I've just glanced up for Christmas. My wife and my mother-in-law bought a print. It's you know, one of these limited edition prints, and it's a painting of George Washington, and he is just clasping his hands, and he's praying. And it's interesting. History has tried to deny, the modern history denies that George Washington had any spirituality. It's so interesting, and it's all fake, as pictures of him praying and so on. But we actually have, firsthand historical descriptions of that spirituality. And I think eventually, again, you and I come back to the importance of the spirituality. You have your toolbox, I do therapy. But we come back to some really common grounds. And this is, in many ways, folks, the common ground of America, believe it or not. The common ground of America was about a moral nation. You know, the founders said that we will not retain our democracy without a moral citizenry, a citizenry that is thinking about things like, because they were deeply enmeshed in the Judeo-Christian traditions, very much in the Genesis and the and very, very much in Exodus and the Jews escaping to their freedom. They were, I think Franklin and a few others wanted to make that part of the national coin. One side was going to be Exodus. Didn't happen, but so that we need a spirituality in the country that says that we are treasures. We need to respect each other, not harm each other, not judge each other, even if we disagree with each other. And that's the, without that context, you can't have freedom. One of the founders said that, you know, a constitution is nothing unless the people believe in the principles of it. That's it. It's just paper otherwise, unless the people use it to as a symbol to believe in, that human beings have to have limits on what they do. They can't just turn the world over when they want to. They can't just tear everything down when they want to. They have to think about what they're doing. And our revolution was not a tearing down revolution. I've just been reading over and over again a little book written by a German after our revolution, and he described the difference between our revolution and the French Revolution. This was very radical for him to do. He said they have nothing to do with each other. The French Revolution went in and tore down everything, took everything. It had no limits. The American Revolution preserved our freedom. We imposed nothing on anyone. And we had tremendous respect even for the people in our country who disagreed with us. Washington didn't go from house to house shooting protectors of the king. And we tried hard not to have a revolution. We begged the king up to the last minute to not impose these unfreedoms on us. So our revolution was to us to pursue freedom. And eventually it would encompass the slaves. Don't forget that, folks. Yeah, these men had their limitations. Almost all of them couldn't see past slavery, except for some really marvelous people like Ben Franklin. And then finally Washington freed his slaves on his wife's death and provided for them for the rest of their lives, things you would never hear anywhere else. He didn't pass on his money, his wealth to anybody. He set up a trust to take care of the slaves, educate them, give them opportunity. So this country has really strong principles. They're Judeo-Christian, they're about freedom. They will not survive without a moral nation, people who understand this. This is the key now. I don't even feel articulate up to the cause. It's more like learn about what America really stands for. Learn why we have a unique patriotism, which is about freedom, personal responsibility, opportunity to leave Russia and come here and build lives for ourselves. You really must understand that, because if we go, the whole world goes, and you will eventually go with it, and I will go with it, and Peter will go with it. So I apologize in a way for coming back to this, but this has been a week of a horrific turning point of the oppression of at least half the American people, and the other half doesn't realize that they will come for you too. This doesn't stop. This is like the COVID-19 policies that I've so been talking about so much. Eventually they come for you. They control you too, eventually. It's not about your liberation. It's not about anybody's liberation, what's going on right now. So, well, we have been talking, I think, about our limit. Peter Resnick, you can find him very easily, folks, online. There's a The name actually is not common, R-E-Z-N-I-K, and you can find him very easily in New York City, and he will probably talk to you if you're in Afghanistan. He seems to be that kind of fellow. You can get his phone number off the internet, and he's got...
It is drpeterresnick.com. This is it.
You have to say that louder.
drpeterresnick.com.
Yes.
And on PRN, I'm talking on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. every Tuesday at 2 o'clock.
Well, welcome to PRN. I've been on PRN first just on the radio for years and years. Gary Null was helping me fight brain mutilation lobotomy in the 1970s. So he and I go back a long way, and he's a wonderful man. He's it's really good that you have a relationship with him. I'm very proud of our long-term relationship, which I didn't know about. And it's a wonderful thing, folks. One of the things you get when you speak out, this might be a really good way to end, but one of the things you get when you speak out, yes, you get scared. Yes, you are vulnerable, but you make friends. You get to know other people who are trying to be brave and courageous in the face of all the suppression that's coming now from the left in our country. And you need to do it. It doesn't matter whether you're a lifelong liberal or lifelong progressive. I'm sure you're an idealist. I'm sure you believe in wanting to do what's right and good. You're being used by people who want to control everything. They're not going to stop with Trump or Peter Bregan or whoever else they're going after. Just be aware of that. Be aware that your idealism is being used. I think, and that love and justice, judgment, leaving judgment behind, caring, understanding, learning about each other, but respecting freedom, shutting no one down, shutting no one's opinions down. Very important. Well, Peter Resnick, thank you so much for being on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. My wonderful audience, those of you who just wonder what in the hell I'm talking about, remember that there are things about me you respect. So maybe trust that and look into whether you want my freedom taken away. Do you want Peter Resnick's freedom taken away? Is that what we're about here in America? And will that serve you and your children and your grandchildren? It will not. So thank you much for all of you being here. Peter Resnick, thank you for your appreciation. I love what you're doing. I love your thinking. And folks, you will see Peter Resnick again.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you. And thank you, my wonderful audience.